Chapter 9 The Last Debate. The morning came after the day of battle, and it was fair with light clouds and the wind turning westward. Legolas and Gimli were early abroad, and they begged leave to go up into the city, for they were eager to see Merry and Pippin.
"It's good to learn that they're still alive," said Gimli, "for they cost us great pains in our march over Rohan, and I would not have such pains all wasted."
Together the elf and the dwarf entered Minas Tirith, and folk that saw them pass marvelled to see such companions, for Legolas was fair of face beyond the measure of men, and he sang an elven song in a clear voice as he walked in the morning. But Gimli stalked beside him, stroking his beard and staring about him.
"There is some good stonework here," he said, as he looked at the walls, "but also some that is less good, and the streets could be better contrived. When Aragorn comes into his own, I shall offer him the service of stone rites of the mountain, and we will make this a town to be proud of."
"They need more gardens," said Legolas. "The houses are dead, and there is too little here that grows and is glad. If Aragorn comes into his own, the people of the wood shall bring him birds that sing and trees that do not die."
At length they came to the Prince Imrahil, and Legolas looked at him and bowed low, for he saw that here indeed was one who had elven blood in his veins.
"Hail, Lord," he said. "It is long since the people of Nimrodel left the woodlands of Lorien, and yet still one may see that not all sail from Amroth's haven west over water."
"So it is said in the lore of my land," said the prince. "Yet never has one of the fair folk been seen there for years beyond count, and I marvel to see one here now in the midst of sorrow and war. What do you seek?"
"I am one of the 9 companions who set out with Mithrandir from Imladris," said Legolas. "And with this dwarf, my friend, I came with the Lord Aragorn. But now we wish to see our friends Merry Arduk and Peregrin, who are in your keeping, we are told."
"You'll find them in the Houses of Healing, and I'll lead you thither," said Imrahil.
"It will be enough if you send one to guide us, Lord," said Legolas. "For Aragorn sends this message to you. He doesn't wish to enter the city again at this time, yet there is need for the captains to hold council at once, and he prays that you and Éomer of Rohan will come down to his tents as soon as may be. Mithrandir is already there."
"We'll come," said Imrahil,
and they parted with courteous words.
"That is a fair lord and a great captain of men," said Legolas. "If Gondor has such men still in these days of fading, great must have been its glory in the days of its rising."
"And doubtless the good stonework is the older, and was wrought in the first building," said Gimli. "It is ever so with the things that men begin. There is a frost in spring, or a blight in summer, and they fail of their promise."
"Yet seldom do they fail of their seed," said Legolas. "And that will lie in the dust and rot to spring up again in times and places unlooked for. The deeds of men will outlast us, Gimli."
"And yet come to naught in the end, but might have been, I guess," said the dwarf.
"To that the elves know not the answer," said Legolas.
With that the servant of the prince came and led them to the Houses of Healing, and there they found their friends in the garden, and their meeting was a merry one. For a while they walked and talked, rejoicing for a brief space in peace and rest under the morning high up in the windy circles of the city. Then, when Merry became weary, they went and sat upon the wall with the greensward of the Houses of Healing behind them, and away southward before them was the Anduin, glittering in the sun as it flowed away, out of the sight even of Legolas, into the wide flats and green haze of Lebenin and South Ithilien. And now Legolas fell silent while the others talked, and he looked out against the sun, and as he gazed he saw white seabirds beating up the river.
"Look," he cried. "Gulls! They are flying far inland. A wonder they are to me, and a trouble to my heart. Never in all my life had I met them until we came to Pelagia, and there I heard them crying in the air as we rode to the Battle of the Ships. Then I stood still, forgetting war in Middle-earth, for their wailing voices spoke to me of the sea. The sea, alas, I have not yet beheld it, but deep in the hearts of all my kindred lies the sea longing, which it is perilous to stir. Alas, for the gulls, no peace shall I have again under beech or under elm."
"Say not so," said Gimli. "There are countless things still to see in Middle-earth, and great works to do. But if all the fair folk take to the havens, it will be a duller world for those who are doomed to stay."
"Dull and dreary indeed," said Merry. "You must not go to the havens, Legolas. There will always be some folk, big or little, and even a few wise dwarves like Gimli who need you. At least I hope so. Though I feel somehow that the worst of this war is still to come. How I wish it was all over, and well over."
"Don't be so gloomy," cried Pippin. "The sun is shining, and here we are together for a day or two at least. I want to hear more about you all. Come, Gimli. You and Legolas have mentioned your strange journey with Strider about a dozen times already this morning, but you haven't told me anything about it."
"The sun may shine here," said Gimli, "but there are memories of that road that I don't wish to recall out of the darkness. Had I known what was before me, I think that not for any friendship would I have taken the paths of the dead."
"The paths of the dead?" said Pippin. "I heard Aragorn say that, and I wondered what he could mean. Won't you tell us some more?"
"Not willingly," said Gimli, "for upon that road I was put to shame. Gimli Gloin's son, who had deemed himself more tough than men and hardier under earth than any elf. But neither did I prove, and I was held to the road only by the will of Aragorn."
"And by the love of him also," said Legolas. "For all those who come to know him come to love him after his own fashion, even the cold maiden of the Rohirrim." "It was at early morn of the day ere you came there, Merry, that we left Dunharrow, and such a fear was on all the folk that none would look on our going, save the Lady Eowyn, who lies now hurt in the house below. There was grief at that parting, and I was grieved to behold it."
"Alas, I had heart only for myself," said Gimli. "Nay, I'll not speak of that journey."
He fell silent, but Pippin and Merry were so eager for news that at last Legolas said,
"I'll tell you enough for your peace, for I felt not the horror, and I feared not the shadows of men, powerless and frail as I deemed them."
Swiftly then he told of the haunted road under the mountains, and the dark tryst at Erech, and the great ride thence, 90 leagues and 3, to Pelagia on Anduin. 4 days and nights, and on into a fifth we rode from the Black Stone," he said. "And lo, in the darkness of Mordor my hope rose, for in that gloom the shadow host seemed to grow stronger and more terrible to look upon. Some I saw riding, some striding, yet all moving with the same great speed. Silent they were, but there was a gleam in their eyes. In the uplands of Lomardon they overtook our horses, and swept round us, and would have passed us by, if Aragorn had not forbidden them. At his command they fell back. Even the shades of men are obedient to his will, I thought. They may serve his needs yet. 1 day of light we rode, and then came the day without dawn, and still we rode on, and Kiril and Ringlo we crossed. And on the 3rd day we came to Linhir, above the mouth of Gilrine. And there men of Larmadon contested the fords with fell folk of Umbar and Harad, who had sailed up the river. But defenders and foes alike gave up the battle and fled when we came, crying out that the king of the dead was upon them. Only Ungbor, lord of Larmadon, had the heart to abide us, and Aragorn bade him gather his folk and come behind, if they dared, when the grey host had passed. 'At Pelagia the heir of Isildur will have need of you,' he said.
Thus we crossed over Gilrine, driving the allies of Mordor in rout before us, and then we rested a while. But soon Aragorn arose, saying, Lo, already Minas Tirith is assailed. I fear that it will fall ere we come to its aid. So we mounted again before night had passed, and went on with all the speed that our horses could endure over the plains of Lebenin. Legolas paused and sighed, and turning his eyes southward, softly he sang,
Silver flow the streams from Kaelos to Eruvi, in the green fields of Lebanon. Tall grows the grass there in the wind from the sea, the white lilies sway. And the golden bells are shaken of Malos and Alfirin. In the green fields of Lebanon, in the wind from the sea.
Green are those fields in the songs of my people, but they were dark then, grey wastes in the blackness before us, and over the wide land, trampling unheeded the grass and the flowers, we hunted our foes through a day and a night, until we came at the bitter end to the great river at last. Then I thought in my heart that we drew near to the sea, for wide was the water in the darkness, and sea-birds innumerable cried on its shores. Alas for the wailing of the gulls! Did not the lady tell me to beware of them? Now I cannot forget them.
For my part I heeded them not, said Gimli, for we came then at last upon battle in earnest. There at Pelagia lay the main fleet of Umbar, 50 great ships and smaller vessels beyond count. Many of those that we pursued had reached the havens before us, and brought their fear with them, and some of the ships had put off, seeking to escape down the river or to reach the far shore, and many of the smaller craft were ablaze. But the Haradrim, being now driven to the brink, turned at bay, and they were fierce in despair, and they laughed when they looked on us, for they were a great army still. But Aragorn halted and cried with a great voice, Now come, by the Black Stone I call you. And suddenly the shadow host that had hung back at the last came up like a grey tide, sweeping all away before it. Faint cries I heard, and dim horns blowing, and a murmur as of countless far voices. It was like the echo of some forgotten battle in the dark years long ago. Pale swords were drawn, but I know not whether their blades would still bite, for the dead needed no longer any weapon but fear. None would withstand them. To every ship they came that was drawn up, and then they passed over the water to those that were anchored, and all the mariners were filled with the madness of terror and leapt overboard, save the slaves chained to the oars. Reckless we rowed among our fleeing foes, driving them like leaves, until we came to the shore. And then, to each of the great ships that remained, Aragorn sent one of the Dúnedain, and they comforted the captives that were aboard, and bade them put aside fear and be free. Ere that dark day ended, none of the enemy were left to resist us. All were drowned, or were flying south in the hope to find their own lands upon foot. Strange and wonderful, I thought it, that the designs of Mordor should be overthrown by such wraiths of fear and darkness. With its own weapons was it worsted.
Strange indeed, said Legolas. In that hour I looked on Aragorn and thought how great and terrible a lord he might have become in the strength of his will had he taken the ring to himself. Not for naught does Mordor fear him, but nobler is his spirit than the understanding of Sauron. For is he not of the children of Lúthien? Never shall that line fail, though the years may lengthen beyond count.
Beyond the eyes of the dwarves are such foretellings, said Gimli. But mighty indeed was Aragorn that day. No, all the black fleet was in his hands, and he chose the greatest ship to be his own, and he went up into it. Then he let sound a great concourse of trumpets taken from the enemy, and the shadow host withdrew to the shore. There they stood silent, hardly to be seen, save for a red gleam in their eyes that caught the glare of the ships that were burning. And Aragorn spoke in a loud voice to the dead men, crying, "Hear now the words of the heir of Isildur. Your oath is fulfilled. Go back and trouble not the valleys ever again. Depart and be at rest." And thereupon the king of the dead stood out before the host and broke his spear and cast it down. Then he bowed low and turned away, and swiftly the whole grey host drew off and vanished like a mist that is driven back by a sudden wind, and it seemed to me that I awoke from a dream. That night we rested while others laboured, for there were many captives set free, and many slaves released who had been folk of Gondor taken in raids, and soon also there was a great gathering of men out of Lebenin and the Aethir, and Angbor of Lamadon came up with all the horsemen that he could muster. Now that the fear of the dead was removed, they came to aid us and to look on the heir of Isildur, for the rumour of that name had run like fire in the dark. And that is near the end of our tale. For during that evening and night many ships were made ready and manned, and in the morning the fleet set forth. Long past, it now seems, yet it was but the morn of the day yesterday, the sixth since we rode from Dunharrow. But still Aragorn was driven by fear that time was too short. "It is 40 leagues and 2 from Pelagia to the landings of the Harland," he said. "Yet to the Harland we must come tomorrow or fail utterly." The oars were now wielded by free men, and manfully they laboured. Yet slowly we passed up the great river, for we strove against its stream, and though that is not swift down in the south, we had no help of wind. Heavy would my heart have been, for all our victory at the havens, if Legolas had not laughed suddenly. "Up with your beard, Durin's son," he said, "for thus is it spoken, oft hope is born when all is forlorn." But what hope he saw from afar he wouldn't tell. When night came it did but deepen the darkness, and our hearts were hot. For away in the north we saw a red glow under the cloud, and Aragorn said, "Minas Tirith is burning." But at midnight hope was indeed born anew. Sea crafty men of the Aethir, gazing southward, spoke of a change coming with a fresh wind from the sea. Long ere day the masted ships hoisted sail, and our speed grew until dawn whitened the foam of our prows. And so it was, as you know, that we came in the third hour of the morning with a fair wind and the sun unveiled, and we unfurled the great standard in battle. It was a great day and a great hour, whatever may come after.
"Follow what may, great deeds are not lessened in worth," said Legolas. "Great deed was the riding of the paths of the dead, and great it shall remain, though none be left in Gondor to sing of it in the days that are to come."
"And that may well befall," said Gimli, "for the faces of Aragorn and Gandalf are grave. Much I wonder what counsels they are taking in the tents there below. For my part, like Merry, I wish that with our victory the war was now over. Yet whatever is still to do, I hope to have a part in it, for the honour of the folk of the Lonely Mountain."
"And I for the folk of the Great Wood," said Legolas, "and for the love of the Lord of the White Tree." Then the companions fell silent, but a while they sat there in the high place, each busy with his own thoughts, while the captains debated. When the Prince Imrahil had parted from Legolas and Gimli, at once he set for Eomer. And he went down with him from the city, and they came to the tents of Aragorn that were set up on the field not far from the place where King Theoden had fallen. And there they took counsel together with Gandalf and Aragorn and the sons of Elrond.
"My lords," said Gandalf, "listen to the words of the steward of Gondor before he died. You may triumph on the fields of the Pelennor for a day, but against the power that has now arisen there is no victory. I do not bid you despair as he did, but to ponder the truth in these words. The stones of seeing do not lie, and not even the Lord of Barad-dûr can make them do so. He can, maybe, by his will, choose what things shall be seen by weaker minds, or cause them to mistake the meaning of what they see. Nonetheless, it cannot be doubted that when Denethor saw great forces arrayed against him in Mordor, and more still being gathered, he saw that which truly is. Hardly has our strength sufficed to beat off the first great assault. The next will be greater. This war, then, is without final hope, as Denethor perceived. Victory cannot be achieved by arms, whether you sit here to endure siege after siege, or march out to be overwhelmed beyond the river. You have only a choice of evils, and prudence would counsel you to strengthen such strong places as you have, and there await the onset, for so shall the time before your end be made a little longer.
Then you would have us retreat to Minas Tirith, or Dol Amroth, or to Dun Harrow, and there sit like children on sand castles when the tide is flowing? Said Imrahil.
That would be no new counsel, said Gandalf. Have you not done this and little more in all the days of Denethor? But no, I said this would be prudent. I do not counsel prudence. I said victory could not be achieved by arms. I still hope for victory, but not by arms.